the destruction of Babylon. So we're going today to look primarily, somewhat superficially, but to get some sort of overview of how this is mentioned in prophecy and what the scriptures do say about it. Very interesting to me how difficult it is to find a nice, clear statement of the causes of the French Revolution. It was an extremely complex time. I have any number of books on the subject, and no matter which one you open up, you find all kinds of very detailed explanations of what was going on. Probably, therefore, summary from an encyclopedia is probably the best, because they must digest everything down to a condensed article where you have the high points. I'd like to read, just to begin, the listing of some of the indirect and the direct cause of the French Revolution. Indirectly, there was a rise of capitalism and commercial expansion. Therefore, there was rapid economic and intellectual development not matched by social and political changes. There was an imbalance. The privileged classes kept exacting more dues from the productive classes. I'm sure you hear echoes of the current day in this room. A large minority of peasants owned their land, but the majority of them were tenants, but they were all receiving insufficient income from their farming, and speculators were making fortunes from those crops anyway. The philosophy of the period, there was great criticism of religion and absolutism. You know, you don't want to pin anything down. You never want to say this is true. I mean, everything's relative. That all has its beginnings in the French Revolution. There was great propagation of scientific materialism, and there was a lot of preaching of faith in progress. Now, those may not sound like causes of a revolution, but those were situations which existed in France at that time, and which indeed did lead to the revolution itself. Now, the direct cause is stated as chaotic state of government finances, a huge national debt. There was an attempt made to avert bankruptcy by asking the privileged classes to share in the national financial burden. They refused. And you know the rest of the story. For 10 years, it all broke loose. All right, with those few historical items as background, we'd like to examine the scripture. The French Revolution was the prototype of the fall of Babylon. We're going to, first of all, take the briefest overview of texts in Daniel and Revelation. Then we're going to go back and look at some detail in those same texts. And the reason we're going over it twice is because in order to understand the detail, it's important to refresh our minds as to what the general tenor of the prophecy is. Daniel chapter 12. Let's at this moment just look at verses 4-9. In the fourth verse of Daniel 12, Daniel receives his most uncomforting information, where he basically tells us, shut up the book, don't try to understand things. It's not going to be available until the time of the end. Now, that particular phrase you've got to keep in mind, because this is, in essence, the end of the French Revolution, 1799, the time of the end. And then Daniel sees this peculiar sight. He sees two people in relationship to a river, according to verse 5. Brother Russell tends to translate it flood, and I'm going to do that today.
just because we want consistency here. And our topic is the other flood. I'm sure you normally think of Noah's flood as the flood, but the other flood is the French Revolution. So we have these two people standing on either side of this flood, and we had some discussion going on in verses 6, 7. When we get into 7, we see that a date is given to us. Time times and a half a time. 1260 years, which from your chronological studies, I'm sure you realize, leads us to 1799, that time of the end. And then verse 9, that terrible statement again, "Go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end." Now that's bad news for Daniel. That's great news for us. Because if you're standing way back there where Daniel was, there's no hope. But when you're standing where we are, and we're looking backwards, it's a promise that those words aren't sealed anymore. And we have benefited from that very fact that those words are not sealed. Now let's go to Revelation 9. Again, just noticing a couple highlights. Revelation 9 is in the midst of a series of trumpets blowing. And the book of Revelation opens with a series of churches, seals, and trumpets, seven each, all which seem to be synchronous. The seven churches, the seven seals, the seven trumpets, all the same time period. So we notice in Revelation 9, verse 13, the sixth angel sounded. And we want to keep that in mind because the context of Revelation is terribly important. The sixth angel we believe to be Martin Luther. So this is talking about the Philadelphia stage of the church. If we're looking at history in Revelation chapter 9 from that point forward, chapter 10, and chapter 11 halfway through it, we have to look back into that sixth period of the church for it to make sense. Chapter 10, which we are going to look at in more detail than the rest, opens with this statement, "I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head. His face was as it were the sun, and his feet as pillars of fire." As the chapter continues, you see that this fellow has something to do with the book too. Remember, Daniel had to shut the book up. Here in the second verse, this fellow has a book, an open book, not a shut one. And we have things about thunders happening in verses 3 and 4. And then we have this angel lifting up his hands and making a statement. And the little book appears again in verse 8. And John starts eating it up. And that's the content of chapter 10. We'll see its import as we come back to it later. Chapter 11. You notice in verse 3, the 1,260 days that were spoken of by Daniel are mentioned again. In verse 2, the 42 months are mentioned, which is the same period of time. In verse 13, and this is important for our topic, "and the same hour," meaning at the same time of these events that had just been talked about, there was a great earthquake, and a tenth part of the city fell. So we have here the French Revolution. One-tenth of that ten-horned picture that Revelation deals with. A one-tenth sample of what we can expect at the end of the age. Chapter 12, verse 6, we notice that a woman is fleeing into the wilderness for a time period. Again, 1,260 days. Verse 14, woman is given wings of an eagle that she can fly into that wilderness, and she's nourished for time, times and a half a time, again from Daniel's verse. And verse 15, the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood. So we now have the flood that Daniel spoke of also, again, in a context that mentions that period of time, the time, times and a half a time. Okay, that's our topic. The topic is the time of the end, the time, times and a half a time. The French Revolution, which precedes it, and the scriptures, which are looking at it. Now let's back up. Daniel 12 again. Verse 4. But thou, Daniel, shut up the word and seal the book even to the time of the end. That gracious promise that virtually assures that this book will be open in 1799 to understanding. Many shall run to and fro. Period of insanity. I don't know how else to say it. I think that's the best way to picture what man is doing as he runs to and fro. Just total insanity in the social world. And knowledge shall be increased. Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood other two. Now, I presume he means by that two others beside himself. One on this side of the bank of the flood, and one on that side of the bank of the flood. Now, if the flood is indeed the same flood that we read about in Revelation 12, with the serpent cast out of his mouth. If that flood is indeed the French Revolution, and I think we have absolutely no reason to doubt that. I think we have no reason to doubt that it has something to do with the time of the end, because look at the context in Daniel. Seal the book till the time of the end. What's going to be the sign of it? You're going to have a flood there. That's the sign. But you can start looking into this book and having it make sense. As soon as you see that flood, that's the time to start looking. All right, why are there two people? One on this side, meaning Daniel's side, the BC side, and one on that side, meaning past the French Revolution, sometime past 1799. I think these represent two people who are interested in knowing what's in the book. The one on Daniel's side. Well, let's read it. And one said to the man clothed in linen. Which one is saying that? Which one's asking? Obviously, it couldn't be the man on the other side of the flood. It couldn't be the man post-French Revolution, because he wasn't there yet. This was Daniel's time. These were, in essence, the faithful in Daniel's day saying, what does this mean? And in essence, they're going to get an answer that says, sorry, I can't tell you. You've got to wait a while. Let's look at it in more detail. One, that's the BC man, says to the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river. Now we better find out who that is. I think that this is Gabriel. Simply standing as a messenger of interpretation, which in the book of Daniel was Gabriel's place. He was an angel of interpretation. Every time Daniel had a hard time understanding, Gabriel came along and said, this is what it means. Now, notice verse 7. A little description of him. Okay, let's look backward in Daniel to the 10th chapter, verses 5 and 6. I lift up mine eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed with linen. Now, you remember, I hope, back in Daniel 12:6, that verse starts out simply by saying, and one said to the man clothed in linen, like you're supposed to know who that is, like you've seen him before. It doesn't say, and the one said to a man clothed in linen. So this man clothed in linen was never mentioned previous to this verse in Daniel 12. And yet, this one standing on the side of the flood says to the man clothed in linen, who is it? He's this one that's also in chapter 10. A certain man clothed in linen, whose loins were girded with fine gold of Uphaz, his body also was like the beryl, and his face as the appearance of lightning, his eyes as lamps of fire, his arms and feet like in color the polished brass, and so on.
Quite a description of him, isn't it? You may remember when we read Revelation 10:1,
the angel there was described somewhat in similar terms. I think this is Gabriel. Let's also look earlier in Daniel 9:21. Yea, whilst I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me, and verse 22, he informed me. Also, chapter 8, verses 15 to 17. Came to pass when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and sought for the meaning, then behold, there stood before me as the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Uli, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell upon my face. But he said unto me, understand, O son of man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. Here's Gabriel again. There it says it's Gabriel. But you notice what his message is. His message is the same thing that it is in chapter 12. He's saying, you can't understand it till the time of the end. Okay, back to chapter 12. Now that we digress so much. Remember, we have the flood, we have somebody standing on either side of it. We'll call him the B.C. man and the A.D. man, just for clarity's sake. Verse 6, the B.C. man says to Gabriel, who, the margin says, was from above the waters of the river. He's standing over this flood. He's looking down as an interpreter. And this B.C. man says, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the flood. Notice this, because we must remember it later. When he held up his right hand and his left hand, and swear by him that liveth forever and ever. Remember that picture. Because it occurs again in Revelation. Stands up, he holds up his right hand and his left hand, and says, and swear by him that liveth forever and ever. And here's the answer to the question. It'll be for a time, times and a half a time. I'm sorry, Mr. B.C. man, you can't know it until the time of the end. That's the message. Oh, he gives a little more detail there, not for that poor man, but for us, I think. The A.D. man is the harvest church. That's us. And you notice, it never says anything about him in Daniel. It introduces him. He's on that side of the flood. He drops it. He's just standing there waiting. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't do anything. He's just there. He's lost. As far as this prophecy is concerned, he's not in this prophecy. He's just there because we have to look for him later in history. He is we. Is that right? He is we. Okay, we'll take that up a little bit later in Revelation 10. All right, in verse 7, we got the answer. It'll be 3.5 symbolic years. Verse 8, Daniel says, and I heard, but I understood not. That's important, because that was the prophecy. He couldn't understand. You can't understand till the time's up. You can't understand till the time's up. Verse 9. After he said, my Lord, will be the end of these things, he says, go thy way, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Now, Brother Russell treats that by saying that certain prophecies are not unlockable until certain historic events make them obvious. That it is absolutely impossible to understand certain things until history has occurred that makes them plain. And that's why this angel could say with the utmost confidence, there's no way that you're going to understand it. Because it is not understandable until history has opened it up. And of course, history in this case is the other flood, the French Revolution. The thing that we are glad that happened because it opened it up to us. Now let's go to Revelation chapter 11. And we're not going to stay here very long except to remind ourselves that chapter 11 is still under that sixth angel sounding, that sixth trumpet, that sixth stage of the church, the Martin Luther Church, the Philadelphia Church. And that date that was in Daniel is clearly stated there in verse 2 and verse 42 months and 1,200 threescore days. It's stressing that. And we come to verse 13. Let's read it again. In the same hour, the same time that this prophecy of the time of the end was to occur, at the same hour was there a great earthquake, a revolution, and a tenth part of the city fell, France. And in the earthquake were slain of men 7,000. Now, as the revolution progressed, people got nervous. And one thing that happened was all the nobles and clergy got together one night. One night. Not like Congress takes 4 months to do something. One night, these men got together and said, we're in trouble. And one night, they abolished the feudal system in France. Titles, titles, titles galore. All went. That whole system of aristocracy and peasants went in one night. One night. There were slain of men 7,000. And it caught on so much so that they dragged the priests and the nuns through the streets till they were dead. Because not only was aristocracy unpopular, but so was the church. But notice what it says. The remnant were affrighted, and they gave glory to the God of heaven. After all these titles were abolished, after the priests and the nuns had experienced some terrible years, they reestablished the Roman Catholic Church in France. They were so frightened by their own revolution that they, quote, gave glory to the God of heaven. Well, now, who's that? It's not the God of heaven. This is Revelation. These are symbols. This is not a literal statement. The God of heaven, the ruler of the religious world, was the Pope. And they simply reestablished the papacy in France. Now, that, of course, is not going to happen when the other 9/10 of the city fall apart. But that did happen when the 10th part of the city fell. When the other 9 parts fall, they will give glory to the real God of heaven. Now let's go to chapter 12, verse 5. We see that out of the early church grew the apostate church, the man-child. Verse 5, she brought forth a man-child, papacy, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child, papacy, was caught up unto God and to his throne. Papacy was exalted to the position of the religious rulership of the world. Verse 6, and the woman, the true church, fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Now, she needed feeding for that 3.5 symbolic years. Because she did not have total understanding yet. Not that we don't need feeding now, but the implication is here, the church didn't stop being fed when the time of the end arrived. 1799 arrived, 3.5 years were over, the church was no longer not being fed. But the point was, the feeding now could be very different, which we'll see in a moment. Because now the feeding is because Daniel's book is going to be opened, just as it was promised back there to Daniel. Remember, there was that one character, the BC man, standing on the other side of the flood. He just stood there. He didn't say anything. That's us. That's the whole church past 1799. They were just waiting for that book to be opened. Verse 14. To the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, which we would expect to be the Old and New Testament, that she might fly into the wilderness, into a place where she is nourished for a time and time and half a time from the face of the serpent. Now, and the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood. The French Revolution was a challenge, much of which was founded on great truths. This was something that was challenging society, changing society. Obviously, Satan had hoped that this would do away with religion entirely, and it did for a while in France. He wanted to do away with the true church. But verse 16, the earth helped the woman, society opened up her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. The rest of the world liked the idea of liberty, equality, and fraternity, the call words of the French Revolution. And here I think we have to see in the next verse that the church was still to have after that time an antagonist. The dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of the seed which kept the commandments of God and had a testimony of Jesus Christ. So after 1799, the church is still subject to the anger of Satan, particularly through the civil power. Now let's go to chapter 10. And as we go into chapter 10, I want to stress one other thing. Remember, 9:13 is where the sixth angel sounded. You will note in your Bible that the seventh angel does not sound until chapter 11:15. So everything between 9:13 and 11:15 is events during the Philadelphia stage of the church. It is in that context that Revelation 10 occurs. And to place it anywhere else, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but I think it's rather imperative that we have a real good reason for doing it. Because Revelation is an extremely orderly book. Chapter 10 falls right here in the midst of the sixth trumpet. Therefore, it must refer to events under the sixth trumpet. Chapter 10, I saw another mighty angel come down. The book of Revelation mentions three mighty angels, only three of them. And it mentions all kinds of angels, but just three mighty ones. And unfortunately, in the King James, it only mentions two mighty ones, because the King James translates one of them a strong angel instead of a mighty angel. It's interesting to see where these three mighty angels are. You'll remember one of them in 1821. A mighty angel took up a millstone, cast it in the sea, saying, "Thus with violence shall Babylon be thrown down and not found anymore." That was one of the mighty angels in Revelation. The first mighty angel in Revelation is in chapter 5, verse 2. And this is at the beginning of the age. I saw a strong angel, a mighty angel, proclaiming with a loud voice, "Who is worthy to open the book and to loose the seals thereof?" That angel is standing at the close of the Jewish age, before the church understands anything, except that God has a plan. How do we figure it out? It's sealed. And the third mighty angel is right here in Revelation 10:1. I think all three mighty angels are events. I think the angel which will take up Babylon and cast it like a millstone into the sea is an event. I think the angel, the 5-2, is an event, although I have a harder time describing what event that is, unless it is the troublous time that Israel was having with the Roman nation just before the crucifixion. This particular angel, because of its context, in my mind, must be the event of the French Revolution. In each case, I think it is an event which interprets prophecy. I think we will not understand the full destruction of Babylon until it happens. Obviously, the angel in 5-2 was something that interpreted prophecy, because it said, here is the one that's going to open prophecy to you. Likewise here, it is an event which interprets prophecy. Daniel was sealed till the time of the end because you couldn't interpret Daniel until there was a Napoleon. You couldn't interpret Daniel until there was a French Revolution. All right, let's continue. Verse 2. He had in his hand a little book open. You remember the little book in Daniel. It says twice. It doesn't call it a little book. It's just a book. It's obviously the book of Daniel, the one Daniel wanted to understand because he wrote it and he couldn't understand it. Here it's called the little book because I think it's attempting to avoid confusion with the big book, which is the Bible itself. It's attempting to avoid confusion with the book in chapter 5 that had the seven seals on it that somebody had to open. It's a little book, Daniel. And you'll notice, it's a little book open. It's not closed anymore. This is what Daniel wanted so much. This is what that poor BC man was hoping for. He said, please, you're standing over the flood. Tell me. He said, sorry, it'll be a time, times and a half a time before I can tell you. But now it's open. Because the time, times and half a time is over. Now this angel sets his right foot upon the sea and his left foot upon the earth, because it affected both stable society and unstable society. Verse 3, he cried with a loud voice, as when a lion roareth. And when he had cried, seven thunders uttered their voices. And when the seven thunders had uttered their voices, I was about to write. Now I, of course, is John, representing the church branch. And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered, and write them not. Verses 3 and 4 are parenthetical, I think, but they do come out of the French Revolution. I think the general interpretation of thunder as being controversy is perfectly adequate. I think all kinds of controversy came out of the French Revolution. The philosophical controversies about the liberties of man, the rights of man, all of those things that affect mankind. All kinds of controversy, seven of them, complete number, came from this great upheaval we call the French Revolution. The whole world today is suffering from those controversies and profiting from them, because some of them are good ideas. But even though this little book now is open, because we can understand Daniel and be thankful for that, which is the most important thing about these prophecies, when it comes to John getting involved in these seven thunders, he says, oh, I'm just about ready to get involved in this. He's going to write these down. And the voice says, no, John, that's not for you. The church should stay clear and separate from all the controversies that have arisen in the time of the end. We are not interested in the civil rights movement. Oh, of course we are. But the solution is the peaceable kingdom. The solution is not our writing about it. It's not the John Christ getting involved in it. So these seven thunders just disappear from prophecy simply because we're not supposed to have anything to do with them. But they're there to tell us that they would come out of the French Revolution. Verses 5 and 6. And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven. Remember that back in Daniel? Gabriel, who was over the flood, he lifted up two hands, and he swear by him that liveth forever and ever, the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever and ever. Why the similarity? Because it is in essence the same event. Gabriel standing over the future and interpreting it to the BC man by saying, sorry, you can't have it till it happens, was just like the event occurring itself here, which is this angel, and saying whatever he said, because we haven't read what he said yet. So this is the French Revolution speaking. What does he say? He says, if you take out the spurious part, that there should be time no longer. Now, a more modern translation, he's standing there and he says, time's up. What time's up? The very time that we saw in Daniel. The BC man asked the man over the flood, when can I know? He said, 3.5 years. But here, the angel, without even being asked, said, time's up. The 1799 date has arrived. The 3.5 prophetic years are over. What a marvelous, marvelous intelligence for us to have. However, I think the Lord, and through this angel, realize how we are with chronology. We like to have closing dates, don't we? But the Lord likes all of us to wait, not just Daniel. So the very next word is but. Time's up, but. In the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he hath declared to his servant the prophet. So the French Revolution opened the book of Daniel. And when he said time's up, he said, you can understand Daniel, but you won't understand the whole mystery yet until the seventh angel sounds. So this fellow is saying there's a whole stage of the church yet to come. But you've got something wonderful. You are at the end. You're at the time's up period of the 3.5 year prophecy. We're saying, and the voice which I heard from heaven. You remember what that was? That was back in verse 4. It was the voice that told him not to write about the thunder. Apparently his voice is talking to him again. The voice that I heard from heaven spake unto me, meaning to the church, again, and said, go and take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel which standeth upon the sea and upon the earth. And I went unto the angel and said, give me the little book. And he said to me, take it and eat it up. It shall make thy belly bitter, but it shall be in thy mouth sweet as honey. And here in prophecy, you have what happened to the church in the latter stages of the Philadelphia period. You have the Miller movement and associated movements where they gobbled up prophecy. Most particularly Daniel. You know, the Adventist movement started at that time. And what's the book that the Adventists love the most? Daniel. Because it became open, and they ate it up, and it made their belly bitter. It just didn't sit well, just didn't digest well because their conclusions were wrong. They forgot that verse 7. They forgot that they didn't have the whole message. They forgot the mystery wasn't finished yet, that there was more to come. And they thought it was all done. They ate this little book, and they said, I got all the answers. And the Lord said, no. You mean digestion there, spiritually. But it tasted good. And it tasted good ever since. Let me back up to verse 8. Then he said, take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel. I want to stress again how important the adventure of the French Revolution were to the interpretation of prophecy. And to do that, I want to go back to Matthew 24. If you don't have a marker in. Now look at verses 14 and 15. This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, etc. You notice that word therefore. He says, because the end has come, ye therefore see what Daniel meant. There is proof in the Lord's own words, not just Daniel's, not just in an angel's, but the Lord's own words. He said, because the end has come, as it was prophesied in Daniel, you therefore will understand the words of Daniel. So this French Revolution angel with ends in 1799, which results in the Napoleonic campaign of that date, which opens the entire 11th chapter of Daniel. Therefore, you understand the book of Daniel. Therefore, you go to this French Revolution angel and take the book right out of his hand. You say, oh yes, you've just made it make sense. Let's continue. Verse 10, I took, in the time of the Miller Movement, the little book of Daniel out of the angel's hand and ate it up, and it was in my mouth as sweet as honey. And as soon as I had eaten it, my belly was bitter. The great disappointment of 1844. Verse 11. And he said unto me, thou must prophesy again before many peoples and nations and tongues and kings. You see, verse 7 and verse 11 point forward to the seventh stage of the church, to our stage of the church. And it suggests that we would be prophesying again using the book of Daniel, which was opened as a result of this historic event. I think we are the again phase mentioned in verse 11. Thou must prophesy again before many peoples and nations and tongues and kings. Now, obviously, it's been done in great deal by Brother Russell's work. I don't know that we can say it's over. It may yet be affecting us, even as Revelation 12 pointed out that the dragon was lost with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed. And we are the remnant of her seed. And it's not all over yet. We still have 9/10 of the city to fall.